is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for more old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with Sherlock Holmes and the Discordant Bells, an episode from 1948. Then we'll hear from 5-Minute Mystery and Murder Under Tent. We'll finish off with the new adventures of Nero Wolfe and the Bashful Body, their episode from December 29th, 1950.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and more than 1,200 leading retail stores from coast to coast present that immortal character created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, starring John Stanley. This week's story, The Adventure of the Discordant Bells.
Listen to those bells, Holmes.
Yes, Watson, the historic Blandford bells. They've been ringing from that bell tower for 3 centuries.
Sounding out the curfew, eh, Holmes?
More than that, my dear fellow. They've warned of enemy ships at sea, of storm and danger.
Great Scott, Holmes, the bells there.
They're ringing out murder now, Watson. Quick to the bell tower.
Well, Dr. Watson, working late at your memoirs tonight, I see.
Yes, Mr. Harris. And on a particularly fascinating adventure, if I may say so. I call it The Adventure of the Discordant Bells.
Rather strange name, Dr. Watson.
Yes, it is indeed, and rather a strange case. To this day, Mr. Harris, I cannot hear the sound of tower bells without recalling vividly the peculiar events of this remarkable adventure.
And, Dr. Watson, you're going to tell us all about it.
I shall, Mr. Harris, I shall indeed. But suppose you begin by telling us some of the facts about Clipper Craft Clothes.
Thank you, Doctor. You really ought to include America when you count your blessings on Thanksgiving Day, because America has made it so easy for you to afford the good things in life. No other country anywhere could give you suits that come near the superb quality of Clipper Craft at only $40 and $45. But at Clippercraft, such miracles happen every day when more than 1,200 of this country's finest independent stores from coast to coast concentrate their mighty purchasing power. That calls for enormous quantities of fabric. That keeps every last member of Clippercraft's great tailoring staff working on a full-time, all-year-round production schedule. The savings would make you gasp. That's why your Clippercraft suit of luxurious worsted costs only $45. And why so many millions are taking advantage of Clippercraft's superior values in expensive-looking topcoats and overcoats. Yes, compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now, Dr. Watson, you were going to tell us of the adventure of the Discordant Bells.
So I was, Mr. Harris. And it begins properly near Eastbourne, at a place called Beachy Head on the Channel Coast in the South Downs country. There, atop a frowning cliff, stood Blandford Abbey, built by the first Lord Blandford centuries ago, along with the famous Blandford Bells and the Bell Tower. These bells were not only historic, but priceless in a material sense, studded with jewels and encrusted with gold filigree. Then one afternoon, Lord Blandford and the Abbey trustee, Charles Easterly, were in council at the Abbey, when they received a visitor.
My name is Aldgate, Lord Blandford. William Aldgate. You know the name?
Yes, Aldgate. I know the name.
And well, his lordship should, eh, Mr. Easterly?
Look here, Aldgate. If you're going to enter that ridiculous family claim of yours to the Blandford Bells...
They're mine, Lord Blandford. Do you hear? They're mine. By family right. My ancestor, Christopher Aldgate, cast those bells for Lord Peter Blandford in the 17th century. He was never paid for his work. He was cheated. Died in debtor's jail.
And I suppose you expect me to pay you for the bells, eh, Holgate?
My rightful inheritance, Lord Blandford. My father tried to collect it from your family, and my grandfather before him, and his father too. But I'll not be put aside as they were.
Oh, won't you, Holgate? Well, let me tell you this. You have no legal right to collect anything, and I'll not submit to blackmail.
Now get out.
Very well, Lord Blandford. But believe me, you'll regret this. You haven't heard the last of this yet.
A very unpleasant fellow, your lordship.
Yes, Easterly. That word unpleasant reminds me. I have a very unpleasant duty to perform at the bell tower this evening.
Yes?
I must tell Oliver Mudge, the bell ringer, that his services are no longer required.
But why? Why, your lordship, why? Why are you giving me the set?
I'm sorry, Mudge, but your conduct forces me into it. Twice you've reported to the bell tower here in your cups, disgracefully drunk. And three times you have rung the curfew late.
But your lordship...
I don't propose to argue the point, Mudge. Tonight you ring the bells for the last time.
No. No, Lord Blandford. You'll not separate me from my beautiful children up there in the belfry. From father to son, my family has rung those bells ever since they was hung in the belfry. You can't give me the sack. You can't.
I can and I will, Mudge. I've already engaged a new bell ringer, Alfred Riggs. He'll be here tomorrow to take your place.
No, Lord Jim, you Lord Jim, no, please. Here come my babies up there, my wee babies. Your tongues are still. Come, little Davy, big George, and beautiful Betty. Open your brown mouths and cry. Come, big George, awake. Weep, my winsome Betty. Weep, girl. Weep bitter tears, for this is our time of parting. Come, little Davy. And now, all of you, cry, cry. Sing, sing a sad song, my beloved ones. Hail, hail. Move your tongues, my babies. Move your tongues, pour your tears from your throats. I'll have my revenge, I will, if they steal you from me. I, Oliver Mudge, the bell ringer, will have his revenge.
Beauties up there. You've got a new master now. Me, Alfred Grigg, the best bell ringer in all of England. Just as soon as I can light this lantern, we'll ring out the curfew and...
Will you, Griggs?
Who's that? Who's there? In the bell tower. Who is it? I can't see. No! No! Take your hands away from my throat. I can't breathe. Oh, please. No.
Well, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I've given you what facts I possess. After the new bell ringer, Griggs, was found dead, and knowing that Lord Blandford was in mortal danger, I came post-haste to Baker Street here.
I see. A very wise decision, Mr. Easterly.
You say this bell ringer, Griggs, was found hanging from the center bell rope?
Yes, Dr. Watson.
And the official police, what's their view of this rather peculiar phenomenon, Mr. Easterly?
Suicide.
I see. But I take it you are not so sure.
Well, Mr. Holmes, in view of Holgate's claim to the bells and the attitude of the original bell ringer, Oliver Mudge...
Quite.
Well, it seems to me, Holmes, a man like this bell ringer might resent getting the sack enough to...
We cannot spring to any conclusion at this time, my dear Watson. The first rule of investigation, ascertain the facts, then form the conclusion.
Then you'll come to Beachy Head and look into this situation, Mr. Holmes?
By all means. This particular problem has certain peculiar and bizarre facets that I find impossible to resist. Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
I believe there's a noon train for the South Downs country. We shall make it a point to be aboard.
Right, Holmes.
You will accompany us, Mr. Easterly?
No, Mr. Holmes. I have some rather urgent business here in London that will keep me overnight.
As you wish, Mr. Easterly. We shall meet you at Beachy Head tomorrow.
Mr. Holmes, I had no idea that Mr. Easterly, our Abbey trustee, had summoned you here to Beachy Head. But now you have arrived, I bid you welcome.
Well, that's very kind of you, Lord Blandford. And I must say it was a very pleasant journey.
Lord Blandford.
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
A few questions, if you please.
Why, of course.
Do you believe the verdict of the official police that Alfred Griggs hanged himself?
I have no reason to believe otherwise.
What about the bells, Your Lordship? I suppose they will remain silent now?
Not at all, Dr. Watson. For three centuries, the Blandford bells have rung every day. They have tolled their warning through the South Downs of danger, the call to arms, of public meetings for emergency. In calmer times, they have faithfully rung the curfew. And they will go on doing so.
Indeed? How?
The dead man's son, Peter Griggs, has courageously volunteered to step into the breach and replace his father. He will ring the bells for curfew tonight.
I see. But now, Lord Blandford, where can we find the discharged bell ringer, Oliver Mudge?
Well, I'm afraid you have some trouble there, Mr. Holmes. Mudge has disappeared.
Disappeared, eh?
Yes. The police visited his cottage yesterday and found the place empty.
Significant, don't you think, Holmes?
Perhaps, Watson, perhaps. And this man Holgate, the man who claims he owns the bells, where can we find him?
He lives on Peddick Lane, just above High Street.
Excellent. Come, Watson, we'll be off to Peddick Lane and have a few words with Mr. Holgate. Holgate, I take it you knew the original bell ringer, Oliver Mudge?
I knew him, Mr. Holmes.
So perhaps you could tell us where we might locate him.
I don't know that, Dr. Watson. I mind my own business, I do, and I let Mudge mind his.
And I presume your business is entering a claim to the Blandford bells.
Aye. But they should be called the Holgate bells, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, I understand you approached Lord Blandford with your claim on several occasions.
Aye, so I have. I've approached his lordship. He's thrown me out of the abbey every time he has.
And Mr. Easterly? I presume you've talked to him, too?
I've done that, too. But him and Lord Blandford, they're two peas in a pot. And here I am. With not a shilling, and those bells up there worth a fortune.
Well, I must confess, Holgate, I can understand your feelings in this matter.
Aye, and they'll not take down the bells. They'll keep them up in the tower. Well, let them, says I. They won't sound a note, what with Alfred Griggs dead. They'll not ring now.
On the contrary, Holgate, they will.
Eh? What do you mean?
The dead man's son, Peter Griggs, has volunteered to stand by as bell ringer.
I see. Young Peter, eh?
Exactly. But come, Watson, we must be off.
Where to, Holmes?
It's rapidly getting dark, Watson, and I should like to inspect that bell tower.
Holmes?
Yes, Watson?
Where in blazes are we? No, it's so dark, I can't see a thing.
We're very near the bell tower, Watson. In a few moments, we shall pass through the Blandford graveyard at the rear of the abbey and thence to the tower.
Graveyard, indeed. I must confess it goes with the mood of those bells. Listen to them toll.
Yes. Mournful, aren't they, Watson?
Eerie is more like it, Holmes. They sound as though they're ringing out a funeral in the night.
Obviously they are. Young Griggs has taken this opportunity to ring out a requiem for his dead father.
Well, I wish he'd change to something more cheerful, Holmes. That blasted tolling is beginning to get on my nerves. Holmes, great Scott! Listen to those bells!
Yes, Watson, something's gone wrong.
Sounds as though young Griggs has suddenly gone mad.
Quick, no time for talk now. To the bell tower. Here, Watson, through this door. The only way to get into the bell tower.
Yes, right, Holmes. Holmes, look. It's Peter Griggs, the bell ringer.
Yes, Watson. Hanging by his neck on the bell rope, swinging back and forth like a grotesque pendulum.
When you stop to think of it, you have a lot to be grateful for here in America, especially the brilliant American ideas that are dreamed up just to give your hard-earned dollars greater value. Let's take one shining example. The Clippercraft Plan. More than 1,200 fine independent stores from coast to coast participate in this plan. And it would stagger you to know how much money Clippercraft saves on production and distribution costs. But it is these very savings that make it possible for Clippercraft to give you the finer quality of expensive-looking topcoats or overcoats for as little as $40 to $47.50. And it is because of these savings that you can own Clippercraft's new lightweight zipper lining topcoats at incredibly low prices. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits, topcoats, and overcoats. In Manhattan, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
And now, let's return to our story, Dr. Watson.
Well, Mr. Harris, Holmes and I stood there for a moment, spellbound in horror, watching the limp figure hanging by the neck sway back and forth, in a wide arc in the bell tower, for all the world like a gruesome human pendulum. We'd seen no one enter or leave the bell tower. Then, while I held the bell ringer's lantern high, Holmes seized young Griggs's body and gently brought it to a stop. Then he pointed out,
"Watson, this door is the only entrance or exit to the bell tower. Yet this bell ringer was strangled and hung upon that rope not 1 minute ago."
Holmes, you mean it?
"I mean that the murderer may still be in this bell tower."
"What?"
"Watson, you have your service revolver with you?"
"Yes, I took it along, Holmes, but..."
"Give it to me."
"But why?"
"Quick, Watson, your revolver."
"Holmes, what are you going to do?"
"Hold that bell ringer's lantern high, Watson. I intend to climb that ladder and have a look into the belfry."
"Did you see anyone up there, Holmes?"
"No, Watson, the belfry's empty."
"Holmes, perhaps it was suicide after all."
"Rubbish. We found the corpse swinging back and forth on a wide arc, did we not?"
"Oh, yes, I..."
"Then we may make an elementary deduction. A man who hanged himself on a rope would be found in a stationary position. Obviously, being dead and suspended in midair, he could not swing himself to and fro."
"Jove, Holmes, it's quite clear now. Someone must have been present to give the corpse a push."
"Exactly. A murderer, Watson, with a fiendish sense of the dramatic. I..." "Uh-huh.
Holmes, what is it?"
"Look here, Watson. On the floor."
"On the floor? Holmes, I can't say I see anything here."
"Use your eyes, man. Use your eyes. Observe. Note the tiny grains of sand on the stone surface, somewhat moist to the touch."
"What of it?"
"You'll recall, Watson, that we came to this bell tower along a flagstone walk. Moreover, the entire abbey here is surrounded by a thick lawn. By this reasoning..."
"Holmes, someone is coming."
"Yes, Watson."
"Hello? Hello? Oh. Oh, it's you, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson. I heard the bells and I..." "Good Lord. Griggs. Young Peter Griggs. He's dead."
"Quite."
"But how did it happen? How..."
"That is what we hope to ascertain, Mr. Easterby. I must say that your appearance here is somewhat of a surprise."
"Eh? What do you mean?"
"You told Watson and me at Baker Street that you would not return to Beachy Head until the morrow. It seems that your plans have suddenly changed."
"I, yes. As a matter of fact, I did finish early. Caught the night train back. But enough of that. It's these hideous murders. I assure you, Mr. Holmes, I shall have something extraordinary to say to Lord Blandford in the morning."
"Ah, up at last, eh, Watson?"
"Oh, good morning, Holmes. You seem to have left the hotel early."
"I did indeed, Watson, and after reinforcing myself with an excellent breakfast of kippers, scrambled eggs, toast and marmalade and tea, I took the liberty of examining the abbey premises in broad daylight."
"And particularly the bell tower, I suppose."
"On the contrary, Watson, I studiously avoided the bell tower. At the moment, surrounded by a crowd of the morbidly curious, and the local constables hard put to keep the onlookers at their distance. For my part, I found the graveyard adjacent to the tower far more interesting."
"You did? Why, Holmes?"
"The stones and the main mausoleum itself are built entirely of sandstone and house the last remains of the Blandford family far back into antiquity. After that, I visited the bank and exchanged amenities with several of the local tradesmen."
"Oh, dash it, Holmes, you sound like a tourist with a Baedeker. After all, we're dealing with murder here, you know. And
Come in.
Mr. Elms, Dr. Watson?
Yes?
My name is Whitford, sir. Coachman in the service of Lord Blandford.
Well?
His lordship requests your presence at the Abbey, sir, on a matter of urgent importance.
Mr. Holmes, I have decided to ask Dr. Watson yourself not to pursue this case any longer.
Have you indeed, Lord Blandford? May I ask why?
I do this only at the earnest recommendation of Mr. Easterly, the Abbey trustee. He insists that I close the Blandford bell tower. Remove the bells.
Do you mean silence them forever, your lordship?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
Rather sudden decision, I must say.
True, Mr. Holmes, true. But these tragedies, they've been too much. We've just been forced to rope off the grounds to keep the morbidly curious at their distance. The bell tower's become a house of murder. Death. What is it, Mr. Holmes? What are you staring at?
Watson, allow me the use of your pocket handkerchief.
Of course, Holmes.
Lord Blandford seems to have a red smudge on his left shoulder. Came off quite easily.
Oh, really, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, forgive the interruption, your lordship. That smudge was a jarring note in an otherwise fastidious appearance. Pray proceed. You said you were going to...
But, great heavens!
Holmes, listen! The bells!
Yes, Watson. It seems that the tower has a new bell ringer, after all.
Well, I don't understand it. Who could be ringing those bells?
Suppose we hurry to the bell tower and see for ourselves, your lordship.
Here we are, Holmes.
Yes, Watson, we'll be inside the tower in a moment.
Well, I don't understand it, Mr. Holmes. I don't understand it. Who could be ringing those bells?
We shall see the moment we walk through this door. Whoever it is, it's obviously a professional.
Why, it's Mudge. Oliver Mudge.
Interesting, Lord Blandford. Steady. The original bell ringer comes back to roost.
Mudge! Mudge! Let those bells alone, do you hear?
No! No! You'll not drive me away this time, your lordship. You'll not drive me away from my children. I hear you are going to take them down from the tower, but I'll not let you do it. Will I, my children?
Mudge, I order you to drop those bells.
Oh, my babies, open your bronze mouth. Ring, sing, cry to the countryside. They'll never take you away from me, will they now? Higher and higher, my golden beauties. Tell them you'll stay. Tell them you'll never leave this tower.
Mudge, look out. Holmes, the center bell, the big one is falling.
Mudge. Mudge. Mr. Holmes, is he...
dead? Yes, your lordship, he is indeed. That heavy bell hurtling downward hit Mudge a solid blow, killed him instantly.
Holmes, what the deuce is going on? This is the third time a man has been struck down in this tower. Holmes, where are you going?
Up into the belfry, Watson. And this time I hope to find some very pertinent answers to this hideous riddle.
Holmes! I say up there, Holmes!
Yes, Watson?
Found anything up there in the belfry?
I have indeed, Watson. First of all, the fiend responsible for these monstrous crimes used a hacksaw on the metal support of the big center bell. Sawed it almost completely through.
Anything else up there, Mr. Holmes?
Yes. Yes, indeed, Lord Blandford.
What is it?
The murderer left his footprints in the dust of the belfry. And in doing so, your lordship, I might add, he left his death warrant. Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
We'll return to the belfry here tomorrow morning with the proper apparatus to take casts of these footprints. After that, I'm willing to wager that the villain will be apprehended and the case closed.
Well, Holmes, where the deuce have you been all evening? You've been gone from the inn since late this afternoon.
I've been making the rounds of every pub in Beachy Head, Watson.
Every pub? In the name of heaven, Holmes, why?
Not to quaff the native ale, I assure you, Watson, but rather to disseminate gossip and spread news. By this time, my dear fellow, there's not a man, woman, or child who does not know of those footprints in the tower belfry.
Yeah, but dash it, Holmes, you'll warn the criminal that we're going to take casts of his footprints tomorrow.
Precisely, Watson. And that's why you and I are going to visit Blandford Bell Tower tonight.
Holmes,
I mean the fiend of the bell tower will be there tonight to wipe away the evidence before we get there in the morning. But we shall steal a march on him, my dear fellow. We shall be waiting there in the dark of the night to meet him.
clock, Holmes.
It is indeed, Watson.
My friend hasn't appeared as yet. I must say, Holmes, I'm getting deuced tired of lying prone on this belfry floor. If you had some idea who this fellow is...
I have, Watson. His identity is quite obvious. So, too, is his method of exit and entrance into this tower. And so is his motive for these hideous crimes.
Well, then, dash it, Holmes, why don't you tell me?
Shh, Watson, quiet.
Holmes!
Our friend has arrived, Watson. You have your revolver ready?
Yes, Holmes, I have.
He'll be climbing the ladder up here to the belfry in a moment.
Here he comes up the ladder.
Yes, Watson. Shrink back against the wall.
Yes.
Stand where you are, Lord Blandford.
What? By Jove, Blandford!
Don't move, Your Lordship. Dr. Watson has a revolver pointed at you, and I assure you he'll use it if necessary.
I see. Then you know that I...
Yes, Lord Blandford, I knew some time ago.
But how? How? I thought I'd...
The ego of the criminal mind, Your Lordship. Your crimes were far from perfect to a careful analyst. First of all, you were careless enough to leave grains of sand on the floor. Moist sand. That sand could not have come from the ground since they consisted entirely of lawn and flagstone walks.
Yes, but Holmes, I don't understand.
Elementary, my dear Watson, elementary. Moist sand meant sand from underground. We did not see His Lordship come out of the doorway, you recall. Therefore, he must have left the tower from within, through some sort of tunnel dug underground. And I believe there is a tunnel leading into this tower from the mausoleum. Is there not, Lord Blandford? You hid in your ancestor's mausoleum, came in through the tunnel, hanged those unfortunate bell ringers, and returned to the mausoleum.
How did you know I was in the mausoleum?
The tomb is a soft red sandstone, and you had a red smudge on your shoulder, which I wiped off on Dr. Watson's handkerchief here. That smudge also proved to be sandstone.
Lord Blandford, why did you commit these horrible hackings?
Money, Dr. Watson. I needed money.
Yes, so I ascertained at the bank and by talking to various tradesmen here in the village, Your Lordship. You were heavily in debt through some unfortunate stock transactions and you needed to recoup.
Oh, the bells. That was the answer, do you hear? The bells. If I could get them out of the tower, they'd be mine. I could sell them for thousands of pounds.
But you couldn't dismantle the bells without facing an aroused citizenry, could you, Lord Blandford? You knew the South Downs folk would never let you tear down that tower, so dear to them by tradition.
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
So you fell upon this fiendish scheme to make the tower a death trap, and thus have a legitimate excuse to dismantle the Blandford bells.
Yes. I counted upon the notoriety.
Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
Go to the village and get a constable. I'll wait here with Lord Blandford. And I promise him all the notoriety he wants in every newspaper in England.
Well, Dr. Watson, that certainly was an exciting adventure.
Yes, Mr. Hatt. I might add here that Holmes was true to his promise. Lord Blandford's photograph appeared in every newspaper in Britain, and he was speedily sentenced and sent to the gallows.
And the Blandford bells, Doctor?
As far as I know, Mr. Harris, they are still ringing out the curfew at Beachy Head to this very day.
I see. Well, what about next week's adventure, Dr. Watson?
Well, next week, I shall relate to you the case of the well-advertised murder. It concerns a woman's desperate fight to keep from becoming a homicidal maniac.
Makers of Clippercraft clothes and more than 1,200 stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the program is produced and directed by Basil Lockridge. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by George Spelman. This week's story was written by Max Ehrlich, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Case of the Well-Advertised Murder.
Cy Harris speaking for Clipper Craft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. Stay with us for Behind the Front Page with Gabriel Heater, which follows in a moment.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Inspector Craig, I just decided that working for the police department is very gratifying. Especially even more so when it gets us free passes to the circus.
The word is gratifying, nimble brain. To ratify means to put your stamp of approval on something.
So that's what I said. With me, it's very much okay. When I was a kid, I was always crazy to join a circus.
You know, Pepper, sometimes I wonder...
Yeah?
Oh, never mind.
Inspector Craig, I've been looking everywhere for you.
Oh, hello, Denny. Pepper and I want to thank you for the passes. I think the big show is better than ever this year.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be much of a host, Inspector. It seems the snake charmer has been found dead and...
Murder?
It looks like suicide. I'd like you to run over with me and give it a routine check. Sorry to bust in on your fun this way.
Looks like suicide to me, all right, Inspector.
An open and shut case, as far as I'm concerned.
It's so hard to believe. Dorothy...
You own part interest in the circus, don't you, Brian?
That's right, Inspector. Nat Bryan and I are partners. Nat, I can't tell you how sorry I am.
Thanks.
How long were you and Mrs. Bryan married?
Not long. I can't believe she'd do a thing like this.
She was the snake charmer, right?
Yes.
Suppose you tell us how it happened, Brian, so we can get the facts straight.
Well, lately, Dorothy and I... Well, that is, there have been disagreements. Quarrels.
There was some talk about a trapeze artist, is that it?
Yes. Dorothy was insanely jealous and thought I was interested in a little tightrope walker.
Were you?
No. There never was anyone else for me but Dorothy. And now...
All right, go on.
I came here late this afternoon to get her to listen to reason. She refused to be reasonable. It was quite a scene, and finally she got up and ran into the dressing room.
Yes, yes, I see. These tents are divided into little rooms. It's very clever. You were out here, is that it?
Yes.
And she went into what could be called the other room. All right, go on.
I had no idea what she intended to do, otherwise I just can't seem to realize.
We understand.
Of course we do, Nat. Go on.
Well, that's all there is. She shot herself. And I was sitting here all the time. After a while, I got up and left. I was seen coming from this direction by several people. That's why I came and told you this. I didn't want the police to think I was hiding anything.
You did the right thing, of course. This tent is set apart some distance from the others, isn't it?
Yes. No one wanted to be near the snake charmer's tent. In case any of them got loose.
That accounts for no one hearing the shot. There's one thing I don't get. How is it you didn't hear the sound of a gun going off?
I told you it was late afternoon, feeding time for the animals. Dorothy's tent is next to the giraffes. They were making such a racket hollering for their food, I couldn't hear.
Inspector, if I may make so bold as to make a remark here, this guy is, to put it bluntly, an awful liar.
Why, how do
you... Are you sure?
Plain as the nose on my face.
Well, that's plain enough for me. Hold still, Brian. Don't make a move.
In a moment, Pepper will reveal the clue that led him to believe it was murder, not suicide. But first...
Better explain, Pepper. How do you know he's lying?
Because giraffes is like turtles. They don't make noises. Brother, is he dumb.
Good work, Pepper. Okay, Brian, you're under arrest.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for Nero Wolfe, transcribed in 30 seconds. The chimes are all set to wish you a happy new year this Sunday with a gala broadcast of The Big Show. The unpredictable Tallulah will MC with a host of leading stars of stage, screen, and radio, including Ken Murray, Gloria Swanson, Margaret O'Brien, Jose Ferrer, and many more. And there's a carnival of fun with Theater Guild on the air also this Sunday when the sparkling Lockhart family, Jean, Kathleen, and daughter June, co-star with Van Heflin in Theater Guild's presentation of the exciting story, State Fair. Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Who?
Oh, I see. Oh, and you think Mr. Wolfe might be interested in going over and... Hold on a minute.
Archie, I'm not interested in going anywhere. Ill-considered movement is the curse of our times. Not to mention the mania for fresh air. Phew. Bottle opener, if you please.
Here you are. But that was Zabro's flower shop, Mr. Wolfe.
Indeed.
Got a new shipment of orchids from upstate.
In that case...
Mr. Wolfe, remember the curse of our times, not to mention the mania?
I'll be there.
He'll be there.
After all, a man must risk his life sometimes.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the bulkiest, balkiest, smartest, and most unpredictable detective in the world. That chairborne genius, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Orchids don't grow up overnight. They have to be carefully planted, tended, watered, and watched. And the same thing goes for murder. Take Zabro's flower shop minutes after we got that phone call.
Zabro! Mr. Hansen, I did not notice you are here.
I'm here, and what's more...
You like the way I display your orchids, hmm?
I don't like the way you've been avoiding meeting your obligations.
Please, please, it is better not to shout.
It'd be still better if you paid me what you owe me.
Mr. Hansen, business has not been so good. I will pay.
You'd better.
I intend to...
My lawyers aren't going to be satisfied by intentions.
Your lawyers?
I've no particular desire to own a flower shop, but it looks as if I'm going to, unless you raise some money.
Mr. Hansen, I have worked years. I have given of my blood to make a success of this establishment. You cannot take him from me. You are a rich man.
I intend to stay rich, too. You've got 24 hours, Avro. A man can accomplish a lot in 24 hours.
Yes, Mr. Hansen. Even maybe murder.
Mr. Zabro?
Oh, good afternoon, Miss Hansen.
Is Uncle here?
Yes, he is here. At the display, towards the back of the store.
Thanks. How is he?
He is the way he always is. Hard, vindictive.
Mr. Zabro.
I am sorry. Excuse me now.
Uncle?
What is it, Enid?
Have you seen my display?
The lilies?
Uh-huh.
Yes, pretty.
Well, thank you.
He's not here.
Well, I didn't say...
You didn't have to. John Arndt is not here. Why he is not here, I don't know. His job was to look after my display. Perhaps he doesn't need a job anymore.
You know he does.
Fiddlesticks. After all, if he marries my heiress...
Uncle!
My dear girl, John Arndt is a fairly capable man with orchids. Outside of that, I have no use for him whatsoever. Especially in the role of your husband.
Well, isn't that for me to decide?
Of course it is, except that... Pretty as you are, John Arndt is seeing you through a golden haze. To be precise, the money that will come to you from me when I die.
That's nasty.
It's the truth.
Oh, you can't know that.
I'm going to find out.
What?
I saw my lawyers this morning. Among other things, I instructed them to draw up a codicil to my will. A codicil to the effect that all my money goes to you on one condition.
Oh, you couldn't.
I did. condition was that you refrain from marrying John Arndt, either now or at any time in the future.
Well, that's not fair.
It's a very good way of discouraging Mr. Arndt. What'll you bet his ardor cools off quickly,
You told him?
Yes. Probably why he hasn't appeared as yet. He's sulking.
You really signed that codicil?
I will, as soon as the papers are drawn up. Where are you going?
I don't know. I've got to get away someplace and think.
Very well. Think about forgetting John Arndt. Best thing in the world for you.
Uncle, do you really think you can manage other people's lives for them?
I don't see why not.
No? Well, people don't like to be managed. They get desperate sometimes. And sometimes they kill.
Mr. Wolf, what are you doing?
Getting up. I'm up.
Well, that makes you eligible for the Explorers Club or something.
My coat and muffler, Archie.
I got them here.
Thank you.
You're really going out into that weather outside?
Archie, must you try to be witty?
It amuses me no end. Haven't you seen enough of those weeds yet?
An orchid is not a weed. Another muffler, Archie, the woolen one.
You've already got two on.
Please, fresh air clogs the lungs, Archie.
Sure, everybody knows that, but they won't admit it.
Of course not. A conspiracy of silence. Archie, I'm ready.
You sure? I can see a square inch of skin showing.
Calm. You're driving me to Zabra's.
Mm-hmm. All right, careful. And take a deep breath. I'm going to open the door. You ready?
Yeah, very well. Open it.
Be brave, Mr. Wolf. We'll keep the car window shut, and maybe you'll make it. Careful.
The risks one takes.
In you go. Well, okay, boss. Now, where is Zabros?
45th Street.
Gee, 10 blocks. Grit your teeth, Mr. Wolf. We're off.
Mr. Wolf, I'm glad you are here.
Those orchids you wrote me about had better be worth a trip.
The trip? But I think you live only a little way from here.
Don't forget it had to be made in the open air, Mr. Zabro.
Where are the orchids?
Towards the back. They are from Hansen's place. He is a fine grower. I have made an exhibit.
Good.
Oh, excuse me. Others are here. You go look for yourself, no?
Very well. Archie.
I was just noticing
Did a girl just enter the store?
A girl, a goddess, tall, graceful. Venus de Milo with arms. Arms that were made... Never mind, let's go look at orchids.
Thank you. Very fine.
The exhibit is laid out like nature, huh? Reminds me of a spot in Central Park that I spent some of my happiest moments in.
Then you do like flowers.
I don't go to Central Park to look at flowers. I went there to, forget it.
Gladly. Now go away and annoy someone else.
Venus?
I want to concentrate on these orchids. Goodbye.
Okay. I'll leave you alone with your loved ones. Let's see, maybe I can arrange to be left alone with something I could very easily learn to love. Hey, boss.
Don't bother me, Haji.
Oh, this is serious. There's a lily display just like this one over at the other end of the store.
Nothing connected with lilies could possibly be serious.
Maybe not, but there's a corpse planted among these lilies.
Indeed?
A lot of ferns were banked up in back of the display. I saw a foot sticking out, so I slipped back, lifted a few ferns, and found a body.
Fresh?
Very. The wound was still bleeding. Knife wound.
Sad, very. Now run along.
Well, aren't you going to do anything about it?
Why should I? Anyone who would permit himself to be found dead or alive among a display of lilies is beneath contempt.
Well, maybe the poor guy didn't have a chance to crawl into an orchid display before he died. However, if that's the way you feel, I'll tell the police all about poor Mr. Hansen and let
them... Who?
Hansen, the orchid grower.
He's one of the finest in the country.
Not is, was. Wasn't me who pushed him under the lilies.
Under lilies? Bah. He would have hated that. Have you told Zabro?
No, no. Zabro's been busy up front.
Where is this display?
Ah, right along here.
There's been a number of people in the store since we came. Someone else may have noticed that dead man's foot.
Uh-uh. I covered it.
Satisfactory. At times you give the illusions of intelligence. Is this the display?
Yep. Come around to the back. There's a little space between the back of the display and the wall. Now here, right under this pile of ferns... Of ferns...
Yes, Archie?
Hey, that body...
What about it?
It got bashful. It's gone.
Indeed.
The corpse was dead.
Corpse is off now. Confound you, Archie. Have you been drinking too much milk again?
Now, look, boss, I saw him there. The blood still coming out of his back, and I tell you that...
Let me understand you. Are you suggesting the corpse rose and walked away?
No, but somebody could have dragged it away. Somebody who put it here in the first place.
Pixies, no doubt. Come along, Archie. If this is some half-witted trick to distract me from the orchid...
Oh, no, no. I never come between a man and his love. Hey, wait a minute, Mr. Wolf.
Yes?
Do ferns bleed?
Let me see. Oh. Indeed. Yes, there is blood. Fresh arterial blood on these ferns. Bright red color. Which means there was a wounded person among these lilies recently.
Thanks for the late vote of confidence.
Whoever killed Hansen apparently found a better place for him.
Mm-hmm. Took him home to put him over the mantelpiece.
Unlikely. Hansen wasn't very decorative.
Okay. Now shall for the police?
You have nothing to show them except a fern leaf covered with blood? No.
Don't tell me you smell a fee among all these flowers.
Hansen was a man I admired. Good heavens, Archie. The number of first-rate orchid growers is small enough without one of us being murdered.
Mm-hmm. Unsportsmanlike, huh? Okay, we won't stand for it. What next?
The body was removed from the building. How?
Well, I wouldn't swear to it, but there's a window here that leads out to an alleyway.
Could the alleyway be seen from the street?
I don't think so. There's a bend in it.
Wide enough for a car?
Yep.
Bring Zabu to me. Oh, don't bother. He's coming himself.
Well, Mr. Wolf, what do you think of the... Mr. Wolf, I do not believe this.
What don't you believe?
You are looking at lilies.
Not exactly. Whose flowers are these?
Mr. Hansen's niece grows lilies.
I see. Zabro, did you get all your orchids from Hansen?
Oh, yes, yes. He is an artist.
Practically an old master at the moment. How much money do you owe him?
Who tell you I owe him?
You do, don't you?
Well, yes. Business has not been so good. But did he speak to you?
No, I guess you owed him money.
But I do not understand.
Was Hansen in the store today?
Yes, yes, he came. You hear us quarrel, eh?
Where is he now?
I do not know. He leave, maybe.
I rather think he did. Zabro, who else was in the store within the last half hour who might have known Hansen?
Oh, Miss Hansen was here and John Arndt. He is Mr. Hansen's assistant and, how you say, sweet on Miss Hansen.
Was she the tall girl came in shortly after we did, Mr. Zabro?
Tall? Yes, yes, I think so.
Are either of them still here?
No, no, no. They go.
Together?
Miss Hansen goes first.
Very well. Come along, Archie.
Okay, Mr. Wolf.
You will not tell Mr. Hansen you know of my debts.
No, Mr. Zabro, I won't tell him. As a matter of fact, even if I wanted to, I don't think he would listen.
I love these long drives in the country. Where are we going?
Hansen's place.
Oh, you think he returned to it to haunt it, huh?
He's returned there, I suspect.
Uh-huh. In order to cast suspicion on himself.
Miss Hansen lives with him. Mr. Arndt works for him on the premises, therefore...
Miss Hansen will be there?
I imagine so. Why?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. Boss, can we stop at the next town?
Why?
I want to buy a book on lilies.
This sudden... You mean Miss Hansen grows them in there?
Uh-huh. See, that way we'll have something in common.
Perhaps, but Archie, is an interest in flowers what you want to have in common with her?
Huh?
this is the house that Orchid's built, huh? Snazzy.
Very handsome country home.
The streamlined zombies.
Hello.
I take that back.
Miss Hanson?
Yes.
I'm Nero Wolfe. The person ogling you is my assistant, Mr. Goodwin.
Oh. Well, Uncle's spoken of you, Mr. Wolfe. Oh, come in, please.
Thank you.
I was not ogling. I was merely tracing a resemblance.
Oh, between Uncle and me?
Between you and my heart's desire.
Archie, stop being poetic. It doesn't become you.
In here, please. My uncle isn't at home yet, but... Oh, John, this is Mr. Wolfe, Mr. Goodwin. John is Uncle's assistant.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Hanson hasn't returned from town yet, Mr. Wolfe.
Are you quite sure?
Why, yes. Unless Enid saw him.
Oh, no, I didn't, John.
Indeed. In that case, if you don't mind, we'll wait for him.
Well, of course. We'd be delighted.
Sure. Excuse me, won't you? I've got some work to do.
On orchids or lilies?
The orchids.
Well, then go right ahead.
See you later.
Oh, can I get you something to drink?
Beer will do, thank you.
I'd better help you bring the bottle in, Miss...
Archie.
On the other hand, maybe you can manage alone.
Well, of course I can. I'm a big girl, Mr. Goodwin.
I noticed. I mean, why not call me Archie? Takes less time.
I'd like to, Archie.
Swell. Remember what old Dr. Tidmouse said?
I want a bottle of beer.
Said, I want a bottle... Oh. No. Never mind, Enid. You'd better go gather some beer for Mr. Wolfe.
All right. I'll be back in a minute.
So much of her and all so nice.
Archie, are you forgetting why we are here?
I don't care why you're here. Me,
We're waiting for Uncle.
Uh-huh. Mr. Wolfe, it's unlikely that Uncle is going to walk in through that front door.
True. That is why you're sneaking out the back door to find him.
How do you know he'll be around here?
This is where he lives, isn't it, Archie?
Yes, but if you'll remember, Uncle gave up living earlier this afternoon.
You mean he was persuaded to? Nevertheless, I rather think he'll be around, body and all.
He wasn't in the house, so I tried the conservatory, hothouse, what have you. It was hot in that steam-heated orchid paradise. Also, it was full of orchids. Unfortunately, it wasn't full of Miss Hanson. I wandered hither and yon for a moment, dreaming of her, until I noticed a foot. Same foot I'd seen back at Zabro's, and peculiarly enough, the same corpse was attached to it. Uncle's. I was bending over to take a closer look when I felt a thud. Realized that thud was the sound of something hitting my head, and I began to realize, too, that I'd been knocked almost unconscious, which the second blow did.
Understand where my uncle is, Mr. Wolfe.
His staying away so late is unusual, then.
Of course it is.
Which reminds me, Archie's been gone for several hours.
Yeah, where did he go, Mr. Wolfe?
To look about. Were you in the hothouse, Mr. Hunt?
No, I was packing some plants.
You, Miss Hanson?
Well, after I brought your beer, I went upstairs and rested for a while. Why?
Because if either of you harmed Archie, I shall personally murder you.
Oh, Mr. Wolfe.
Come on, we got to find the boy.
Why should either of us want to harm him?
Because he probably found your uncle's body.
His body? Huh? What are you...
I don't understand.
Mr. Hanson has been murdered.
Oh, no.
Enid.
Oh, stop that, Miss Hanson. You're a perfectly healthy young woman. There's no reason for you to swoon.
Now, look here, you...
Besides, I rather suspect she lost no love for him. Am I right, Miss Hanson?
He was my uncle.
You're aware of the fact? He opposed your marriage to Miss Aunt here.
That's none of your business.
Which means he did oppose it. Mr. Aunt, Mr. Hanson was a friend of mine. I intend to find the murderer after I find his body. It shows a lack of proper respect to transport a corpse about the countryside. Come, both of you, we must find Archie.
This whole thing's like a nightmare.
If you can't wake up from it, let's go on with the search.
Oh, look, there on the ground.
Hutch.
I'll see if he's all right.
Why, this is fantastic. Mr. Hanson stabbed to death, and now Goodwin.
He's just been stunned, thank heavens. He's coming too.
Oh, I died. Oh, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm dead.
Archie, Archie, speak to me.
Oh, I went to heaven.
Are you all right, Archie?
Uh-oh, the other place.
Ah, get up.
Sure, if somebody'll hold my head. Oh, Nish. Are we having an earthquake?
You poor boy. Take my arm here.
I'll take both.
Oui, he's normal. What happened, Archie?
Somebody hit me when I wasn't looking.
Yeah? Why?
I don't know. Oh, yes, I remember.
Yes?
I found Uncle lying right there.
The poor boy's delirious.
Don't tell me he's gone again.
I'm afraid he has, Archie.
Are you sure you saw him?
I'm positive, and then somebody slugged me. That corpse is the shyest one I've ever met.
Blood would have dried. There'll be no signs of his having been placed here. Bad.
Why?
Your testimony would be valueless, especially since you were found unconscious. The jury would suspect you of having hit the bottle.
Why didn't we stay the night? I'm a sick man. Enid would have nursed me.
Ah, you're not sick. And I won't have you taking advantage of that girl.
In my condition, I couldn't have. But maybe she would have taken advantage of me.
Oui.
Is that what they call it in your day?
There's Zabros. Stop the car.
Okay. Here we go.
No, I can manage. I'm not entirely helpless.
Place is closed. Dark.
I was afraid it might be.
Don't tell me Zabro's gone traveling, too.
Possibility, Archie.
You mean he killed Hansen to cancel the debt he owed him, and then followed us out to the country house and dumped Hansen there, hoping to pin suspicion on Eden and John?
Perhaps.
Uh-huh. Slugged me when I found the body too soon, and then... Uh-huh. Guess we better get into the joint.
Door's locked.
A guy I know got out of jail the other day.
Yeah?
He's reformed, so he gave me all his skeleton keys.
You have them with you?
Mm-hmm. And we'll find out in a minute just how good a burglar he was. Very good. Will you come in?
Shut the door.
Okay.
What's that?
Somebody's been hurt. The lights. Nothing up front here.
Back of the store where the exhibits are.
I'll go see. Maybe you better stay here.
Nonsense.
Oh, where? Oh, among the lilies again. But this time there are two bodies there.
Zabro. Quick, Archie.
Mr. Zabro? Mr. Zab? He's been shot, boss. Bad.
He's trying to say something.
In the lilies. Mr. Hansen.
Yes, we know about him. Who shot you?
From the window. Alleyway. Came in.
Mr. Zabro, who?
Inherit. Money. Inherit.
Down, Mr. Wolf, quick. Somebody shooting from that window.
Archie.
All in one piece. Are you all right?
Yes, that car.
It's gone. Brought the body here and...
Zabro.
He couldn't duck. He's dead.
Yes.
Police, boss, this time we've got more than a fern leaf smeared with blood to show them.
Not yet, Archie. I'd prefer handing the murderer over to them along with the victims. I'm going home. Archie, get Miss Hansen and Mr. Arndt there as soon as you can.
Well, suppose they don't want to come.
Knock them unconscious and drag them there.
Not Enid, boss. Enid's... Hey, what Zabro said about inheriting.
Don't anticipate, Archie. When you get them to my office, we'll identify the murderer then.
Mr. Wolf, don't you think this is all a little high-handed, dragging us here in the middle of the night?
Murder is even more high-handed, Mr. Arndt.
Please, John.
Miss Hansen, do you inherit?
Well, I guess so. I'm Uncle's only relative, so I suppose...
Wait a minute, Enid. Mr. Wolf, are you suggesting that she had anything to do with this invisible corpse?
The corpse is no longer invisible, Mr. Arndt.
You've seen Uncle?
Yes, dead, in Zabra's establishment. Lying with a knife in his back, in his own orchid display.
Now you're trying to pin something on me. You know I set up that orchid display.
Indeed. The police will be interested in that information.
But he wasn't found in the orchids. He was...
Yes, Mr. Arndt. He was found where?
I don't know.
You were about to say the Lily display, weren't you?
I wasn't going to say anything.
You're a little late. You already informed us that you knew his body was not placed in the orchid display. How did you know?
I just guessed.
The jury will be very much impressed by your remarkable clairvoyance, especially since, Archie, ask Mr. Zabro to come in.
Mr. Zabro? Okay.
Don't bother, Goodwin.
John, that gun!
Shut up, you little fool.
Enid's a big girl.
I don't know how you tumbled, Wolf. Lucky guessing, maybe.
Oh, come now. Neither of us has indulged in guesswork. You killed Hanson, placed his body in the Lily display to attract suspicion towards Miss Hanson. You felt sure she wouldn't be convicted, so you were safe. She would inherit, you would marry her, a marriage which your uncle opposed. When you saw that Archie had discovered the body too early for you to establish an alibi for yourself...
Then he sneaked the body out of the window into his car and then dumped it in the hothouse.
For time.
Go on, Mr. Wolf.
He didn't intend it to be discovered there, which was why he knocked you unconscious, Archie.
Oh, I'm so glad he had a good reason for it.
He had a body on his hands. He decided to double back, put the body in its original place, and carry through his plan. But Zabro caught him at it, poor fellow.
I thought Zabro was in the other room.
Lost you, you fool. You think I, too, am addicted to carrying corpses about? Zabro is dead. And you've given yourself away unnecessarily. Archie?
All right.
Archie, quick.
Let go, Edith.
I've got his arm.
I'll give him mine with a fist attached.
Very satisfactory, Archie. Now call the police. Inform them you have two corpses and a murderer for them.
You should have heard Mr. Arndt's language, boss, when the police took him away. Oh, I don't think he loves you.
I don't think it matters anymore.
It used to me.
Growing pains. You'll get over it, Miss Hanson.
You trapped him, Mr. Wolf, but what made you so sure he did it?
At the hothouse, when you were unconscious, Archie, Mr. Arndt deplored the fact that Mr. Hanson had been stabbed in the back. And no one had mentioned how he was killed, therefore...
The reason Arndt knew was because he himself had killed Mr. Hanson. Murderers seldom get away with it, no matter how tightly they button their lips.
Well, mine, however, are not buttoned up. Archie?
Oh, the beer is on your desk.
Thank you. Miss Hanson, stop brooding. Try some of this beer.
But, Mr. Wolf, my heart's broken.
As a man who's lived a good many years, Miss Hanson, permit me to assure you that the easiest way of mending a broken heart is by filling the stomach. Ah.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin and G.G. Pearson, Jay Novello, Herb Butterfield, and Byron Kane. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Deadly Sellout. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Friday means another visit with that entertaining eating establishment, Duffy's Tavern.
That's going to do it for Case Closed this week. Hope you enjoyed the shows we heard today. Remember, you can find more Nero Wolfe, more Sherlock Holmes, Case Closed, Old Time Radio in general at relicradio.com. The shows are linked to right on the front page alongside links to everything else, like our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, ways to search the site, and of course, our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you do so from the website as well. Thank you very much to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.